Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. We're going to be ranking a game we nominated for ourselves, Oregon Trail Deluxe.
Basically, your whole goal is to get from Missouri to Oregon.
If you get to the end, it doesn't matter how much of your family dies as long as you're there, right?
Well, it actually does matter if you're playing for score, because having everyone is
look,
about 2,000
look,
points.
It's 1992, I'm in the computer lab at my school. What I'm playing for is to not be reading or doing anything else. So I'm playing, for that. And then also you get to leave funny tombstones when your kids die. So that's like the real reward of the game, is when your kid dies of dysentery, you get to say like, Boogerman died of dysentery.
Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
Yeah. Yeah. No. For some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, a lane maintained with a course saved in colleges. To HG101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as to Tanga, Cal and Bobinator, Booker Hart and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
I don't know!
Okay, today we are doing Otogi Myth of Demons. This is nominated by your new stepdad at Stitcher. Developer is From Software, publisher is Sega for the Xbox. Released in Japan in 2002. And with me for this game are...
I'm Bobinator.
Hey everybody, this is Xerxes.
Okay, so I guess we will get down to talking about Otogi now. This game is an action game, which I had actually picked up on launch because I was pretty hyped for it. Back then, I had never played a Kingsfield game, and I've still never really played a Kingsfield game. But I did know that it was published by Sega, which I thought was cool, because I think earlier in either that year or the previous year, they had brought out Shinobi for the PS2, which is a super flawed game, but one that I really like. I thought it was really fun. So I was hoping for something along that lines. And Otogi isn't really it, even though there are some type of similarities to it.
I do want to say that this game is kind of interesting because it is kind of a departure from the kind of stuff you expect from Software. I mean, usually, even before the days of Dark Souls, you think of stuff like Kingsfield, very slow, methodical, dungeon crawler games, and this is a pretty fast-paced character action game, which I don't think they had really tried until now.
They had the reputation with the Armored Core games, which also are not super action fast. Like it's compared to something like Zone of the Enders, which came later, they're nothing like that.
Yeah, first off, I just want to say how great it is not to be the main host for this show and just not having the main hosting duties. And that's good because I don't have a lot to say exactly about this game. I did play it when it was new. I did revisit it recently. And I don't know. Like, I was really excited to do this because I thought, oh, that was From Software. It's going to be like Dark Souls. And we just did Dark Souls 2, and that was a lot of fun. And I was like, I was in the mood for this. And then I realized that this game feels so floaty and slow. And playing it again now, it melts my brain how slow it feels.
All right.
I
would not compare it to something like Devil May Cry, but I mean, I was compared it to something like Kingsfield, that's more the usual style of the time.
Yeah, that was kind of my feeling about it, too, because it's very slow and floaty. Like, he has the same rough kind of moveset that the ninja had in Shinobi. Like, he has a dash, he has a double jump. He can't climb on walls or anything like that. But I was saying this in the Discord, but it's a game where the combat looks cool, but doesn't feel cool.
It's like if a developer who had seen Bayonetta, but, I mean, it controls more like a Primal, like the PS2 game Primal, kind of like a B-tier version, which feels like kind of like the opposite of what you'd expect from software. They're known for their kind of like precise and deliberate controls in gameplay.
Yeah, one of the main gimmicks behind this game was that you could destroy almost anything in the scenery. Like, you have two main types of sword attack, like a regular just sort of slice, and the ability to whack an enemy across the stage. And whatever that enemy hits, you know, assuming it isn't like an essential part of the stage geometry, if it's just a building or something, it'll get destroyed. And that was something that was really hyped up on the catch copy in the Japanese release, and it's wasn't advertised nearly as much for the American release. And it is something that looks cool. But I sort of feel like this game was developed around that, and everything else was just kind of cobbled together based around that. Because one of the big issues I have with the level design is that it's very small. It's kind of open-ish, and the idea is you just have to kill or find or destroy a certain number of things, and then the stage is over. And the major issue I have with that is that the main character, Raiko, his life is constantly draining. So when you're stumbling around looking for stuff and you're on a time limit, and the time, like, it drains very slowly. And as long as you keep killing enemies, then you get the health regenerates. But it's still, I don't find it very compelling, that sort of structure.
Right. That is kind of different than other character action games of the time. It's not like one continuous journey from level to level. It's more like a very short missions that come in a bunch at once, I guess I describe it.
Yeah, they are pretty short.
And there's a lot of them, right? I mean, there's so much storytelling in this game. I was surprised by the amount of narration that was at the start of every level and the amount of cutscenes. And I mean, that's part of what makes the game so slow, but it was surprising. And that's kind of cool to be surprised in that way.
A lot of that stuff is just kind of like text scrolls and stuff, right? Like, this feels kind of low budgety.
I agree.
I think, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing.
I think they deliver most of the story just by, like, just having constant voiceover as you're playing, which, I mean, I guess is kind of better than text scroll, but not by much.
Oh, yeah. When this game came out, the only thing that I remembered, like, again, I bought it when it came out. It came out with, like, three or four other games that I was super looking forward to at the same time. Like, I think F-Zero or a couple of other stuff came out that summer. And I played the first two levels, and I was like, I just don't care for this game, and then I never put it in again. And the only thing I remember is that annoying bell ringing sound that it makes every time the woman says something.
So what's really interesting to me is, like, reflecting on that now, like in Bioshock, like, the story delivery device isn't really all that different, yet somehow it works in Bioshock and it doesn't work in this game. Why do you guys think that is?
I'm not even particularly faithful that it works all that well in Bioshock. It is a way to deliver stuff, but at the same time, like, I pick up a message in that game and then I'm just sort of like running around. My brain is too focused on playing the game to listen to what they're saying, because a lot of that stuff is just kind of like flavor text anyway. It's like not super important to understand, which is the same sort of thing I get from this game too.
Honestly, though, I'm kind of struggling to say for this game, because I mean, it's clearly been done better before and after. It's kind of just a very B-tier game overall.
Well, like, I kind of wish that one of the requirements for nominating games of the show was that you, like, give a short reason as to why this particular game was nominated. And it doesn't have to be a good reason. It could just be, like, I want you guys to suffer because I hate you all, or because this game is, you know, a personal favorite or something like that. But this game was followed up by a sequel in next year, and it is, I mean, it's another one of those games that I bought when it came out and never really played all that much. But, you know, I put it in for today's show because I know it has a pretty good reputation. And one of the other writers for the site actually nominated it for the 200 Best Games book because he's a huge fan of it. And it is, like, remarkably how much better a game Otogi 2 is. And it's not because they changed anything major. It's just because there are a lot of, visually, I will get to that. But there are just some small, like, control issues that just make it feel smoother. Like, you can actually change the invert the camera controls, which I felt was really, really, really awkward in Otogi.
Agreed. Sega really messed that up. So we got to say, this was published by Sega and was kind of part of their big push for the original Xbox. I mean, they put out so much stuff on the Xbox that sometimes it kind of felt like the return of the Dreamcast in a way.
Gun Valkyrie.
I would also say that it's not only Sega attempting to get more stuff on the Xbox. This feels like kind of that part of that initial desperate push to get Japan to accept the Xbox that never really panned out the way they wanted it to.
Yeah, I don't really know who, if this was like something that Sega commissioned and From developed, or something From did on their own and then just got Sega to publish for them. I feel like it's probably more the latter. And the main reason that I think this ended up as the Xbox again is for like the technical reasons. Like, they bragged about the fact that when you destroyed part of a stage, that would be recorded to the hard drive. So when you revisit it again, everything is exactly as you left it. And that's just something that requires too much data just to put on a PS2 memory card, which is like, well, just one of those like strange design decisions that they would do when developing games in Japan. And I don't feel it's really justifies it being on the Xbox, but at the same time, like, this game is pretty good looking. Like, it's one of the main issues I have with this game versus the sequel is that it's very dark, but it's very crisp. Like, everything looks really nice. It explodes really nice. It does have a very cool atmosphere to it, like compared to like a lot of the jaggy PS2 games, it looks so much better. And one of the things with Otogi too is just striking on how much wider color palette it uses. Like, so much of Otogi 2 is just dark and murky, and I don't know if they just had a change of heart somewhere with the sequel. They just got better graphic developers, but it just, that game looks stunning. Like, just even the first stage, you're in a cavern, and it just, like, there's nothing technically that special about your location, but it just looks gorgeous.
I think it kind of says a lot.
I'll talk about Otogi 2. Like, if you look at the website articles, again, the guy who wrote the website articles, he's a much higher opinion of at least the first game than I do. But he also got a lot of really, like, direct captures from the Xbox, and it's a fantastic looking game.
I think it says a lot. We were discussing the sequel as much as we are the original, really.
Yeah, that's why it's kind of like, why does this, the sequel also has like 5 or 6 different playable characters, in addition to Ryko, and they're just kind of neat. Like the most memorable one is this guy that's just kind of like a floating corpse that doesn't have any arms, I think, but he has a gigantic wheel that just kind of flies around and slashes up guys. I mean, Ryko, the guy is still in it. I don't think he still has the health draining thing. But there's just so much more variety just in having those other characters that, even though the combat doesn't fundamentally feel all that different, it just, I don't know, it just feels more satisfying just in that way.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me because this is a game that I played a little when it came out and then kind of never thought about ever again. And it really has been sort of forgotten by time, like lost to time. Partly, I think that's because just the lack of backward compatibility, which never helps. And I think another big part of it is because, like, the Xbox emulation still doesn't really exist in any meaningful way. And that's also part of how we remember games. There's some charm to it. It's worth remembering in a sense because it's got this kind of like obscure Sega, like, charm of, like, you know, it harkens back to a day when Sega would publish all kinds of cool stuff. And now that era is pretty much long gone.
I really do appreciate the Xbox exclusives that aren't Halo, because there are so many Xbox exclusive games that just no one ever talks about, including this one, honestly.
I haven't hooked up my Xbox in years, just because, like, a lot of the big games that I played, they're on PC now, or just it was like a slightly better version of a game I could just play on a PS2. So it's been a long time that I had held an Xbox control in my hand and just felt how weird it is. But speaking of strange Xbox games, I also dug up a game called Death Row, which I had an old coworker that loved this game. I think it's sort of like a crazy Ultimate Frisbee game. I need to write about that one, too.
It sounds amazing. So someone should talk more about the weird controls. Like, one interesting thing about this game is how you can kind of fly everywhere, or really you kind of float everywhere. And while the game is very empowering about how you move, it does this in a very awkward way. Like, why can't you just fly? Like, why not go the extra half step and just let the character straight up fly?
I don't know. I feel like that may not have been something that was super intentional. I don't know. I'm still going with the thing that they kind of just put it together, and however the character controlled, he controlled. They don't put that sort of thing to any real use. Like, it's not like again, to return to Shinobi, like, you sort of have that same ability. Like there's a lot of sections where you just have to fly or go over nothingness, but you can't fly, but instead you can, like, slash the bad guys and can use that to, like, dash toward them and create a chain of, like, corpses that basically kind of let you fly. I think that's how that game worked. And the trying to beat the final boss of that ridiculous game revolved around that. But I don't think there's enough of a design in Otogi that ever, like, said, this is a skill you need to learn and here's how to put it to a test. It was just, like, the way the character controlled.
So, I have an idea for ranking. I'd like to know what you guys think. I'm thinking somewhere around 220. Is that too low? That's around where Jammer Lammy and Ogre Battle 64 are.
I always forget to bring up the list every time I'm on the show. So. I got it. I don't feel strongly about this game, obviously. I mean, it kind of looks pretty. It has the smashy part is fun for 5 minutes.
I'd say so. One thing, aside from Sega's history on the Xbox and all that, I do think in a weird way, this game really does sort of have the seeds of Demon Souls somewhere deep within it somehow. I can't quite express it. It's kind of like, or maybe it's more like a proto Bayonetta or something. The artwork is definitely there. It's definitely up to par. The storytelling through the world and the environment is there, just like in the Souls games. But the gameplay isn't there. And that's really the crucial part of it. You really have to nail that or you don't have anything. Or you don't have enough.
Where did you say Jammer Lammy was?
That's 221.
Oh, I feel that's way too high.
Okay, where do you think it should go? I don't mind putting it lower, honestly. I don't mind at all.
See, I throw it around Tetris 2 in the 300s, like in the 330 range.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it that low. There's enough visual thing to sort of justify kind of. But again, it's hard to really, really rep this game because everything that this game does that is good is just done so much better in the sequel, even just by, you know, playing it just a brief amount of time. Okay, I mean, I would put it. Okay, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, please.
Oh, I mean, I would just, you know, maybe like low 300s, late 200s.
Is it worse than Rising Zan? I'm not sure.
That game was at least funny, but I don't remember it being good beyond the gimmick. Actually, yeah, maybe Rising Zan.
So that game has a samurai gunman, whereas this one only has a ninja.
I don't think it should go below Kane and Lynch 2.
You don't think so? Oh, yeah, no, not above it. I agree with you.
I mean, I'm...
How about like 285, just to stick it somewhere?
So let me see. That's above Mega Man 02, below Live Alive.
It's below Nightshade. Oh, wait, no, that's not fitting in the Nintendo. No, not the Sega one.
I could live with that. I think what bothers me about it is that this game doesn't shine in any real ways. And some of the games above it on the list would be, I think, a lot more fun to play. I mean, I guess this one is fun too, as long as you don't fly around. Also, it's just important for historic reasons if you're trying to understand From Software, I guess.
I feel a lot of people are doing that because they, again, outside of Armored Core fans, it wasn't anything anybody really cared about. So Demon's Souls just knocked the socks off everybody. And then Dark Souls was like an actual legitimate, huge, gigantic hit. So everybody's kind of backtracking and I think getting a new appreciation, even though their games were typically like they were ignored for a reason. Like they were not mechanically all that interesting, even though they occasionally had an interesting vibe to them. So they get that level of appreciation where the commercial and even the critical success, well, I want to say commercial and critical success, but I think the Otogi did kind of okay with the critics. But anyway, that sort of stuff had eluded them until Demons of Dark Souls.
Also, I do have a question that just kind of occurred to me, which we haven't really compared this game to King's Field, which is kind of its other direct predecessor. How do you guys feel about that?
Absolutely none, because I've never played King's Field.
Well, that answers the question. Bob, you haven't played it either?
I am not really familiar with King's Field, no.
This seems like a good candidate for material that should be left on the cutting room floor for this podcast.
I mean, I would think if they went with another Soulsborne-type game to revisit in the style of Otogi. Like, if they ever made an Otogi 3, like a Soulsborne game, that would be
Isn't
excellent.
That basically what Neo is?
Yeah, I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, but that's
actually, right, I am.
Actually, no, wait. Isn't From making another samurai theme game?
Yeah, they are. I can't remember the name of it that they put out. Is that Gekiro?
So, 285, or do we decide somewhere different?
285 it is.
285.
285, we got Otogi, the first, on the Xbox, the first. From Software fans should totally play it. Others, maybe not so much. That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord, but most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.